the crisis on the border is essentially unprecedented. It's the greatest assault on our sovereignty in American history. So how do we make sense of what's going on? We can look at the immigration crisis as a transnational struggle between five forces with very different interests and goals. That would be the cartels, the migrants, the Mexican and Central American governments, and two competing forces within the United States. Now, I've written a long essay for American Greatness that examines all this in detail. But today, I'm just going to talk about the existential conflict within the American nation state. Now, Joe Biden says that, he says this a lot, we're in a struggle for the soul of America. Well, he happens to be right about that. One side, the red side, while recognizing its imperfections, embraces historic America and its way of life, its principles, people, culture, history, and mores, and seeks to improve both our republic and to transmit it to future generations. The other side, blue, finds historic America and its way of life, well, problematic, plagued by systemic racism, and therefore in need of fundamental transformation. Like the 1850s, we are in the middle of what we could call an inter-regime conflict between two very different ways of life, or two different regimes within one polity. I'm calling these two forces Americanists and transformationists. The anti-Marxist liberals that Yoram mentions this morning are not transformationists. They have a different vision of America, but they want historic America to continue. Now, traditional immigration policy in America includes basically three principles. One, immigration should serve the national interest of the citizens of the United States. Two, that in formulating the policy, we should adhere to the law, the rule of law, the Constitution, statutes enacted by Congress. In short, government by consent of the governed. And three, that the end goal of immigration policy is the patriotic assimilation of newcomers into the American way of life. This Americanist tradition of patriotic assimilation is what George Washington meant when he wrote to John Adams that immigrants should, quote, get assimilated to our customs, measures, and laws and intermix with our people so in order that they can become one people, unquote. This is what Abraham Lincoln meant when he declared that immigrants should be, quote, as if they were the blood and the flesh of the men who wrote the Declaration of Independence. This is what the progressive Louis Brandeis meant when he said the adoption of our language, manners, and customs is part of the process of Americanization. And this is what Democratic Congresswoman Barbara Jordan meant in the 1990s when she declared, Americanization is our term, and we're taking it back. And this is the Americanist tradition that Democratic Congressman Henry Cuellar of South Texas intuitively represented when he recently declared that we have to, quote, deport the people who don't have a right to be here in the United States. It's that simple, unquote. The Biden administration and the transformationists have rejected these three principles. They favor the interests of illegal migrants over American citizens. Living in border communities, they're overrun and elsewhere in the interior. Unlike any previous president in American history, Biden has ignored immigration law and gutted the entire infrastructure of enforcement on the border and in the interior. He's even outlawed the use of the term assimilation in federal agencies. The transformationists adhere to what we can call a cultural Marxist framework of American life as a conflict between oppressor groups and oppressed or victim groups. Their goal, the transformationists, is not to patriotically assimilate newcomers into traditional America, but to integrate the approximately 1.5 to 2 million illegal migrants from 160 countries, according to the New York Times, to integrate them into the oppressed or victims category in order to advance political objectives. Transformationists envision a relaxed border as a policy that's what they, in their words, they would consider it more inclusive, more humane, more universalist, more just, but conveniently, of course, It's more likely to assist their major project, which is, of course, the fundamental transformation of America. Now, Speaker Nancy Pelosi, 7 years ago, June the 28th, 2014, expressed the transformationist ideology perfectly. Pelosi declared, quote, in the context of a large surge of illegal immigration. She said, well, we're all Americans, north or south in this hemisphere. Now I guess you'd include the whole world. She characterized the southern border simply as, quote, a community with a border running through it. 5 years later, in 2019, Pelosi attacked the very idea of enforcing immigration laws. She said, quote, in terms of interior enforcement of immigration, what's the point? What is the purpose? What is the point of any of this? Unquote. Well, the transformationists are gambling that their loose borders, non-enforcement policy will benefit their permanent revolutionary campaign for regime change at home. So far, it's working. But whether they will ultimately succeed or there will be a massive political backlash, it's an open question at this point. At the heart of American constitutional democracy is the concept of government by consent of the governed. Today, the most fundamental decisions of American immigration law, like how many newcomers do we want, under what circumstances, the sort of things that Mark was talking about, these decisions are not being made by self-governing American citizens. They're being made by the migrants themselves, enforced by the cartels, without the consent of the American people. So, what do conservatives do about this? What is the role of national conservatism? The debate within conservatism, the conservative community broadly defined, has centered on the question, this is for decades now, the question of how to respond to the revolutionary identity politics woke project that has been going on, 25 years or so, escalating lately. Is the response accommodation or resistance? The accommodationists are exemplified politically by, let's say, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and someone like Paul Ryan, they favor mass immigration, amnesty, what they're promoting corporate interests and warning conservatives against cultural war fights. The accommodationists are exemplified intellectually by someone, say, like AEI's Yuval Levine, who argues that today's left-right conflicts is not, quote, a political fight to the death, unquote, but a family quarrel between two forms of liberalism, conservative liberalism and progressive liberalism. The argument is over how best to fulfill our common ideals of liberty and equality. That's one view. But in contrast to this, national conservatives must recognize that this conflict is beyond policy differences. The migration crisis is not simply a matter of policy, but part of a broader conflict over the future of the American way of life, over our principles, mores, laws, customs, and history. The argument over critical race theory is not simply an argument over education, but part of this broader regime conflict. The term culture war is actually misleading because it tends to trivialize what is actually going on. Now, Tom Klingenstein is chairman of the Claremont Institute. He's going to be speaking tomorrow. He's written that conservatives must understand that we are in a war, and he said we should act accordingly. He describes the war between what he calls Americanism and woke communism, between, quote, liberty and death, unquote. Now, elements of the roots of national conservatism were formed during successful populist resistance to the mass amnesty legislation promoted under the administrations of George Bush and Barack Obama, supported by McCain and Kennedy in the years 2006, 2007, and 2013, 2014. Proto-national conservatives like Jeff Sessions, then a senator from Alabama, fought a successful two-year front against transformationism on the left and accommodation on the center-right from libertarians and from big business. I suggest that the Trump administration benefited from the intellectual capital of the proto-national conservatism that was developed during those earlier immigration battles that Mark was involved in and many of us were involved in. Today, today, in response to the mass illegal immigration, Texas has sent the National Guard to the border, and for the first time, they're actually not working behind the scenes, but actually arresting individual male trespassers. Florida is also going after criminal networks that are smuggling illegal migrants into that state. Other states have joined Texas and Florida in lawsuits against the Biden administration. They've had some success, remain in Mexico and other successes, but the borders are still open. As Abraham Lincoln noted, in the American Republic, quote, public sentiment is everything, unquote. Therefore, whatever measures the American resistors take at this point, such as blocking all Biden appointments until he enforces immigration law, or impeachment proceedings against Mayorkas or against the president, the goal is not to successfully remove people from office. That's not going to happen. But the goal will be to influence public sentiment, as Lincoln suggested, because whatever actions are taken will have to prevail not simply with the Supreme Court, but in the court of public opinion. Make no mistake, today's illegal mass migration is a crisis of American sovereignty of the highest order. At the heart of democratic self-government is the moral right of a free people to govern themselves. What is at issue in the migration crisis is nothing less than our self-government, as a free people. Do American citizens have a moral right to decide our immigration policy, or is it to be decided for us by non-citizens without our consent? This was essentially the same core principle that Alexander Hamilton argued was central to the American experiment in self-government in Federalist Number 1. I'll quote Hamilton, quote, whether societies of men are really capable or not of establishing good government by reflection and choice, or whether they are forever destined to depend upon accident and force, unquote. Hamilton was saying that success in forming good government require that the American people deliberate and decide the important political issues for themselves, rather than having those decisions forced upon them by others or made by happenstance. Several years ago, AEI's Yuval Levin wrote that we are, quote, not in a political fight to the death, but what I'm calling the transformationists, the group I'm calling the transformationists, essentially, in the migrant crisis today of 2021, this is an existential conflict between Americanists and transformation. It is a fight to the death. That is what is at stake. At stake today is whether our self-governing republic will survive or not. Thank you.